You are about to witness history in the making. Despite the world's highest living standards, the average American remained vaguely discontent, aware that his goal of a better way of life had still not been fully realized. There was something missing.
There's this awful gap in our lives just because we don't have... Oh, but why talk about it?
It's just that... Oh, I keep hoping someone can find a way to...
Don't be a fool, Mary. You know that's impossible.
Oh, I know. It's just that...
Gad, it's ironic. With all our technology and industrial know-how, we still don't have the one thing that could give us a better way of life.
It's the Forgotten Filmcast.
Don't be like Mr. Bungle. Have good lunchtime manners, and lunch will be more fun for everyone.
And welcome to episode 201 of the Forgotten Filmcast. My name is Todd Liebenow, and thanks for joining me for this look at the movies that time forgot. On this episode, I'll be joined by Dave Anderson from Free Kittens Movie Guide to discuss a 1977 film where regular household pets become killers. Starring David McCallum and George Weiner, directed by Bert Brinkerhoff, it's Dogs. But first...
Much of our future depends on the way we use
the Forgotten Filmcast.
Mr. Projectionist, stop the show. Here's great news you ought to know. We've just got a shipment of taste-thrilled treats, all tip-top quality and delicious eats. There are hot dogs and popcorn and candy galore. There are soft drinks and coffee and a whole lot more. So direct your steps to our refreshment stand to enjoy the finest snacks in all the land.
Come Flavos, the delicious oriental treat that's out of this world for taste-tempting goodness. Light and delicious, full of tender, juicy, fresh shrimp meat. America's favorite shrimp rolls. Try Flavos, you'll say they're shrimply delicious.
Drive away your worries and cares at this drive-in theater, where you will see the finest motion pictures of all time soon to be released. Drama, comedy, adventure, excitement. Something for everyone. Here's a brief glimpse of some of the truly fine pictures we've scheduled in the near future.
Mitchell, people don't like you. What kind of a policeman are you anyway?
Brute force with a badge. His name is Mitchell. Joe Don Baker is Mitchell.
Beer got a little excited.
To change. So bust me. You're a policeman, and that's grass.
I don't think Benton likes you. Lance, you're trouble.
Not so many people like you. You gotta cultivate people. And you gotta be nice to them.
God, for one moment I forgot you were a cop.
Mitchell, I want action.
Mitchell, I made a decision about you. Watch out for falling rocks.
Out! On your knees. Face it, Ben. Face it, Ben. On your knees. Get your hand on top of your head. Freeze!
That's very impressive.
Do you get a kick out of this kind of thing?
Joe Don Baker is Mitchell.
A flesh-eating mammal, they have been kept in a domesticated state by man since prehistoric times. When abandoned by man, left to fend for themselves, and deprived of food, they will resort to the most primitive means of survival. Given no other choice, they form the pack.
Most of those dogs were just tourist pets until a few weeks ago.
You better speak up or get.
The old man was the first to feel it. Then Tom saw it.
Did the warden kill that dog?
One of them. Are you saying there's more than one?
Then Millie came face to face with it. Last summer, they were pets. Now they are predators. The right move may mean survival, while each moment brings them closer to death. The pack. They're not pets anymore.
Bobcat and mountain lion.
Yeah, well, none of those bites or lacerations could have been made by either of those.
Then you're back to canines.
Well, I named them.
Oh. Kit fox, gray fox, coyote, wolf.
Which combination of those could be responsible for that range of bites? Because whatever bit Larry Ludicky, it wasn't just one animal.
I don't know.
Right, whatever it is, what's causing it to pack?
Estrogen. Well, a pheromone of some kind.
You can't call estrogen a pheromone.
What would you call it? Harlan, you know what I'm talking about. It's exactly the same principle.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. Social behavior with a chemical basis. I'm not interested in your theories. I need biological precedent.
What about the short chain olfactory compounds elaborated in female monkeys?
Would you know where to look that up?
Sure.
Well, go look it up.
Go answer the phone.
Thompson.
Hello, Dr. Thompson. This is Dr. Taggart at the hospital.
Yes, doctor.
I'm sorry I was so rude to you last night, huh? But the kid was about to float off into the ether. Listen, now. I had a look at Larry Ludicky's body. Been chewed up awfully bad.
What do you think it is?
Hell if I knew. I never saw anything like that.
Looked like he'd been chewed up by some wild animal.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
Well, listen, I think we might have some kind of a problem here. Well, we got another DOA here. Kid been killed in a motorcycle accident.
One of our students?
Yeah, name of Dick Huber.
Listen now. I think whatever got to Larry Ludicky got this boy. Bite marks, tearing of the flesh, lacerations. Just thought you'd like to know.
Yeah, thank you.
What happened?
Well, that was the hospital. One of our students was killed last night.
And it looks as if whatever killed Larry Ludicky also killed him.
Our unidentified wild animal.
Well, you know I'm the last one to speculate. But I'm pretty sure these attacks were made by dogs.
Well, if it's wild dogs, why are we going through all this?
I'm not so sure they're wild. This is a hell of a way to prove your theory, but I think something is causing domestic dogs to pack and attack people.
Okay, our movie this time is Dogs from 1977. And joining me to discuss this film is Dave Anderson from Free Kittens Movie Guide. Dave, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here. It's fun talking about these forgotten films. Really forgotten.
It is so forgotten that I was not aware of it until you brought it up as a possibility to discuss. So I am always thrilled when that happens. But why don't you take a moment here, remind everybody a bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay. During the day, I'm a teacher, but this is my last year. I'm retiring after this year, after 26 years of teaching.
Wow.
Yeah, I've had enough. So... And during the night, I run Free Kittens Movie Guide, which consists of essays and physical media reviews. So we're getting into the busy time of the season where I'm getting a huge influx of titles to feature, you know, for the holidays, which means I had to sit through Scrooged again. I know I'm in the minority opinion on that one. I never cared for that one. But it was in 4K, so I had to give that one a review.
Well, you know, I got to admit, when it comes to that kind of stuff, it's sites like yours that I go to when the people are saying to me, all right, I drew your name, you know, for the Christmas list, like my brother or my sister or sister-in-law, whatever, draws my name, you know, and they need ideas. So I go to sites like yours to come up with like my Amazon wish list so people know what to buy me for Christmas, because I love it when people are reviewing all the new discs that are out there. I'm like, I don't know everything that's out. I go to sites like yours to find out what's new and out there.
I do have a holiday gift guide coming out this month too, so maybe we'll get some ideas from that one.
Excellent. I will definitely be making use of that. Well, it's great to have you back on again. I feel like it's weird to think that this is only your second time on my show, because I feel like we've podcasted a lot over the course of the last year on the Lambcast and places like that. So, but it's great to have you back on here. One of the things that I think I've kind of learned about you as we've podcasted together more, and I get that vibe from the, not just our other discussions, but the two times you, now that you're on this show, both times here we're dealing with a 70s film, and I get the idea that you are very much a 70s kind of guy when it comes to movies.
Definitely a 70s kind of guy. That was the decade that I fell in love with movies, when my parents dropped me off to see The Towering Inferno. And that was my first grown-up movie that I got to go see by myself. You know, that didn't have, you know, Disney creatures in it or anything like that. And
yeah.
And I've been hooked ever since. And so, yeah, a lot of the movies from my formative years were from the 70s. And even today, I like the overall aesthetic of that decade. And, you know, a lot of movies that I didn't actually see in the 70s and I saw years later, I still appreciate them for that aesthetic. And to me, that decade was the last time that movies were still groundbreaking, still kind of edgy, not afraid to be dark. I mean, we still get those kinds of movies now, but they're fewer and farther between. But back then, some of the biggest and best movies weren't always the blockbusters.
Well, it feels like, I don't know, movies from the 70s still kind of sneak up on me. You know what I mean? It's like there's these titles that I know that I grew up with, and then there's ones that I heard about, you know, and never got around to see, or, you know, I remember seeing commercials for them on like WGN or something like that, and, you know, never end up seeing, and now finally getting to see them, I'm like, wow, why, where have you been all my life, you know? And then there's ones that, like, I go, wow, I've never heard of this before, and it's got this star in it and this director and all that, and it just, I don't know, it just seems like it's this bottomless pit of good stuff that, you know, I just continue to discover, you know, and it's weird because I lived through the 70s. I was a kid, but I was there. So, you know, but to kind of be visiting it all the time, like it's some far off in the past, I guess technically it is far off in the past. We're old, let's face it. But, you know, I mean, it's just, it is such a treasure trove of stuff. It's great.
Yeah. And I'm with you, you know, I saw a ton of trailers on TV, but they were rated R, so they were forbidden fruit, so I didn't see them for years later. So they you know, they developed this mystique. And yeah, and even now I'm also discovering films that I had never heard of from the 70s. A lot of them are foreign now, but to me it was the last truly overall great decade. Although the 90s comes close, there was some great stuff in the 90s too.
Well, I agree with both those, but at the same time, my formative years as a film fan definitely came in the 80s, because that's when I was a teenager. And so, you know, that was a decade that means a lot to me too. But they've all got great things to offer here. Now, I was going to ask you also, because, and you kind of hit on this already, you mentioned The Towering Inferno, but the last time you were on the show, we talked about a 70s movie. We talked about a disaster movie, The Cassandra Crossing. And I think that a movie like this, we're going to be going into the animals attack genre here, which I've always kind of seen as kind of an offshoot of the disaster genre. I guess I, again, from our conversations, I think disaster movies, you kind of have a sweet spot for them.
Yeah, and I would agree to a certain extent. In a way, they do have a lot of the same characteristics of disaster movies, especially when it's something like a nature strikes back theme. So yeah, I guess I just I kind of gravitate towards movies where people are put in peril.
Yes, better them than us, exactly. Yeah. Now, but before we get to this movie too, I have to ask. I mean, your site is Free Kittens Movie Guide. Is it going to be a problem that we're dealing with a movie focused on dogs?
Nope, not a problem.
I mean, because there's dog people and there's cat people, right? You know?
I do love dogs, usually other people's dogs, though.
Oh.
As for me, no, I don't have any desire to have one for myself.
Yeah. See, I got to be the same way with cats, but part of that is because I'm allergic to them. So, you know, we don't get along in that way. So, all right. Well, let's get on with this movie we have here today. Like we said, it's called Dogs. I guess you don't get titles much simpler than that. There is some debate, though, about when this film was released. As I looked at various things online, I mean, IMDb has it as 1977, so that's what I've been going with. But, like, if you look at Wikipedia, they say 1976. So I'm kind of like, whatever.
Always take Wikipedia facts with a grain of salt.
Exactly, yeah. So this is directed by a guy named Burt Brinkerhoff, who I got to admit, not familiar with him, but he had a long career both as an actor and as a director, primarily in the area of television. But as an actor, he actually had a Tony nomination for his role in the stage production Cactus Flower. But then he acted in just tons of different TV series. He had appearances on things like The Fugitive, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Gunsmoke, bunch of different series. And then he transitioned into directing, and again, mostly known for directing television. He directed episodes of things like Magnum PI, Moonlighting, Beverly Hills 90210, and he even directed the pilot episode of Three's Company. So this guy got around as a director in television. But when it comes to movies, when it comes to theatrical films, this is really kind of the only one out there. So didn't really, seek his fortune when it came to the big screen. Stuck to the small screen mostly. But this film, it takes place in a small, secluded college town. Recently, a local rancher has had some issues with some of his cows ending up dead, apparently being attacked by some sort of animals. Now, they assume it's coyotes and such, but there's just kind of something weird about these attacks. Now, this is investigated by Harlan Thompson, played by David McCallum. He is the head of the biology department at this small college. He's sort of a young, hip, long-haired professor. He doesn't, you know, really you know, get along with the other faculty members. They kind of roll their eyes at him, you know, and the truth is he's not really thrilled with them either. You know, he just kind of thinks they're a bunch of stuffed shirts, that type of thing. And at first he doesn't think much of these attacks on the cattle. But then some other strange incidents happen. The rancher ends up dead himself because he was like, well, I'm going to find out what animal's killing my cows and I'm going to shoot them. Well, he stays up one night and he ends up being another victim of an animal attack. Now, Harlan begins to investigate this further. Now, we already know who the perpetrators are here, but he starts to investigate, and he is joined by a new member to the faculty of this college, Michael Fitzgerald, played by George Weiner. He is the complete opposite of Harlan, very straight-laced, wears a suit, that type of thing. Okay. Now, they eventually realize, you know, they're looking at all the things. Things don't look right with the bite radiuses on the victims and such. There's different sizes and all that. And eventually they realize what we've seen all along in this movie, that the perpetrators are regular household dogs that are being drawn to group together, to pack, as they put it in the movie, and then attack various folks. And eventually the things start to go crazy. I mean, it just so happens, as all this is being discovered, that the local kindergarten is having a dog show. And so the dogs go nuts and attack the kindergarten. And eventually just there is total chaos in the town as the dogs start attacking various people. And eventually it culminates in a massive attack on the college students who are barricaded in the library. Now, again, this is released in the 70s, so it's prime time for animals attack movies. There were many of these back in that decade. I'm sure we'll probably draw some comparisons as we go here. But I'm going to let Dave start us out here. Give us a few of your thoughts on dogs.
Well, this was one of those, you know, mystique movies that we're, you know, from the 70s that we were talking about. I remember seeing the trailer and, you know, I was stricken with Jaws fever like a bunch of people. So I was seeing all the animal attack movies when I could, you know, good and bad. But this one was rated R. And, you know, I was too young to go. It wasn't playing at any theater where I could sneak in and see it. And my parents sure weren't going to take me to something like this. And so I didn't actually get to see this in the 70s as much as I wanted to, because it had a great ad campaign. I don't know if you've taken a look at the original one sheet poster of
this.
It is great artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with a title tells all, you know, a moniker like that, I couldn't resist, but I couldn't get to it. And years went on, and I kind of forgot about it. I later learned it was released on VHS under the title of Slaughter. But by then, I wasn't actually looking for it. And it wasn't actually until COVID hit. And I spent a lot, you know, I'm a teacher in the real world, so I wasn't going to work. So I spent a lot of my spare time on Amazon, and I was just looking around. And lo and behold, there it was, suggested for me. And all these memories came flooding back. I said, oh, I remember wanting to see that. So I ordered it, and it didn't let me down. You know, I'm older and wiser, and I've developed something of a, you know, into something like a cinephile when I have discriminating taste. But man, it's a lot of fun watching these cranky dogs tear people apart. And, you know, it's not a great film, and I don't, you know, it doesn't aspire to be. It's definitely influenced by Jaws.
Oh, yeah. But,
and you hit the nail on the head. What really made this priceless, and I knew the minute, you know, the title came up, there's this lone, what kind of dog was it? It was a...
Oh, boy, don't ask me. I'm terrible with the breeds.
No, but it was just some kind of Afghan terrier or something like that, running in slow motion, you know, down the street, being joined by other dogs, a variety of, you know, other breeds, you know, Dobermans, a couple of small dogs, a sheepdog, mm-hmm. and then the title turning red with blood as they run slow
yes.
motion. And I just, oh, this is going to be great. And that's what really made it cool. It was like, you know, a big dog party, like Go Dog Go. And, you know, there were our pets rendered crazy by pheromones, supposedly emitting from a local research lab that was operating what they called a linear accelerator, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a bunch of words thrown together. Yeah.
Hey, I accepted it. Sure. I'll buy that. Why not? You know? and, you know, I understand that dogs can be dangerous, even little ones. But as you know, as horror villains go, they're only marginally more menacing than the rabbits in Night of the Lepus. It's not like these are all wild wolves or coyotes or something like that. And I especially enjoyed the scene where they are trapped. You know, they do have all the students trapped in the college, and they're just sitting right on the sidewalk outside, just staring like they're waiting for treats or something. And and there's only about eight of those dogs, but it was just, I love that scene. And you mentioned David McCallum, who is perpetually drunk in the movie. His character was, anyway.
Yeah. No, he's always looking for a beer or something like that. Yeah.
He's always looking for a beer, and that never stops. You know, in a lot of movies, usually someone who starts off as an alcoholic, they have some kind of epiphany, and they pour out their bottle or empty it out. And he doesn't do that. You know, he's drinking throughout the entire movie. And there's a scene where he finishes off a beer and he's riding in a truck with somebody and he throws out the window and the driver just looks at him, you know, gives him this hateful stare for littering. And
there's that one moment where they're first investigating the mutilated cows and he's looking at it, you know, and they're going, well, what do you think? And he's like, well, I don't know. We'll have to look at when it's daylight. I need a beer. After having just come from a cocktail party it's
really, you know, he's an entertaining character. And it was weird for me seeing George Weiner in such an early role, you know, because I associate him with Colonel Sanders from Spaceballs.
Yeah. And he's Fletch's lawyer, or no, Fletch's ex-wife's lawyer, actually. You know, he tends to play characters that you're kind of not really supposed to like. They're supposed to be a little slimy, and he's very likable in this.
And I think it was his first film, or one of his first films. I'd have to go back and look. I don't have it in front of me, but you know, the film also has its own Mayor Vaughn with the college dean, Dr. Koppelman. And, you know, his scenes are wonderful because he doesn't believe Harlan about any of this, even when people start dying, until his own, you know, Irish setter. That's what the dog was. His own Irish setter.
Very good.
Attacks him. And one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie, I don't know if this was an intentional homage to Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, thank you. I thought the same thing.
The one-sided conversation with the mayor is great. And I have to think it was intentionally, you know, a shout out to Dr. Strangelove and, you know, how Peter Sellers did those one-sided conversations with, you know, with Russia.
The Russian premier. Yeah. No, I thought the same thing. I mean, Strangelove is one of my all-time favorites. And as he's going through that scene, I think he's actually calling the governor or something like that. And he's, you know, trying to tell him about what's going on, but he doesn't want to come off sounding like an idiot. And he's making small talk and talking, oh, really? You have a dog too? And oh, that's nice. And all that stuff. And his wife is just standing there making faces at him. And eventually she grabs the phone out of his hand.
I know that's just a great scene.
Well, I think you hit on what I thought one of the great charms of this movie was, and I mean, certainly we'll talk more about just the carnage and the dog attacks and all that kind of stuff. But one of the things that really carried me through with this admittedly silly movie is that we have a bunch of interesting characters going on here. And by interesting, I mean kind of strange and quirky, I guess, is what I'm going for. I mean, it's not like they're deep characters or meaningful or anything like that. I mean, this is a 70s animals attack movie. In the first 3 minutes of the film, we are getting a dog's eye point of view of a pool party. Okay. It's that kind of movie. But there are these just quirky characters throughout that just carried me through things. And I mean, you know, we might as well start with David McCallum and George Weiner, because first of all, I was not expecting these two characters to team up in this. You know, Weiner's introduced there in the beginning as this new guy coming on. He's very straight laced, wearing a suit. He's, you know, I mean, he's balding at 32. Okay. And McCallum's there with shaggy hair and all that stuff. You're like, no way these guys are going to become buddies. And the two of them start working together. And I thought it was just such a great dynamic where you've got this, you know, professor who's trying to be hip with the students, you know, that McCallum is, and he, you know, he doesn't seem to care about much and just always wants a beer and all that. And then Weiner's character is just this, you know, by the book academic, et cetera, et cetera. But the two team up and start investigating this. And it's just a wonderful dynamic between the two of them. And strangely, when I was watching this, I was like, you know who they are. They're Ernie and Bert from Sesame Street. You've got the guy who's the straight arrow and he's, you know, very rigid and all that. And then the other guy who's just kind of let and roll with it and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, that's totally Ernie and Bert.
Yeah, kind of. I can kind of see that. Yeah. And, you know, and the Harlan character spends at least half the movie just belittling him, you know.
Yeah.
and then all of a sudden, you know, when they start teaming up and they start putting the pieces together, and it's actually a pretty smooth transition from them being who you think are going to be adversaries to being allies. And by the end of the movie, you are really hoping both of them, you know, you're hoping both of them make it to the end. And, you know, something I don't necessarily feel about any of the other characters in there.
Yeah. Well, you're saying he was like belittling Weiner's character. And I mean, I think you could say that for just about any of the other characters. I mean, you know, McCallum's character just hates everybody in this town. He can't stand the local folk. He can't stand the other professors. You know, he thinks all the students are idiots.
Oh, I love how he spends a lot of the time talking about how much he hates living there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and one scene that I thought was great and just what, you know, made me go, oh, what a jerk this guy is. There's a scene where he's like hanging out in a bar with a bunch of the students. You know, the students, first of all, these students, they're like singing preschool songs, you know, in the bar. You know, they're singing the one about, like, you know, roll over, roll over. I'm like, was that song ever cool if you were above the age of four? I don't know. But the students are talking about like a movie they saw with giant ants, like they saw Them or something like that. And he starts telling them about how, oh, you know, that's scientifically impossible because ants have an exoskeleton and this and that, and there's no way they could grow above a certain size. And you're just like, dude, come on, it's a movie.
as movie fans, you and I have both met people like that who'll sit there and pick apart the accuracy of something you're just supposed to enjoy. Mm-hmm. You know, I never understood people's, you know, incessant need to just, I don't know if the purpose is to ruin it for people, or, I mean, if you're one of those people who feels like you have to be educated when you're watching a movie, I feel sorry for you. And that, and that character does embody that kind of douchey behavior.
Yeah. I mean, before we get too far off the characters here too, I just, beyond just these two leads, there are other characters throughout this town that are just, have these wonderful quirks about them. And I just thought, you know, made something that could have been just a run of the mill animals attack type of movie much more interesting. I mean, from, you know, like the sheriff who's trying to keep all the trigger happy local guys in line, you know, to like some of the college students. There's like the fat kid, which they call him that in the movie. So, you know, that's not me, who like wanders off to the cafeteria and like is, you know, shoveling cinnamon rolls into his mouth and, mm-hmm. and like singing songs about the cinnamon rolls and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And even down to like when they go to the hospital in one scene and he wants to talk to the doctor there and he's tied up because there's this guy that's tripping out on drugs who, you know, is like, you know, talking about Jesus and stuff. I was just like, what a wonderful bit of color, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, the scene has no narrative purpose, but it is fun watching this guy pretend to trip on acid or whatever he was doing. And he looked like he had a lot of fun in his one moment in the spotlight. And, you know, the rest of us patiently waiting along with Harlan for him to be, you know, sedated.
Well, okay. So, you know, we're digging into characters here when we're talking about what is essentially an exploitation film. There's probably some people that are rolling their eyes at us right now. We need to talk about the carnage a bit. So I guess I'll just throw it to you first when it comes to the attack moments, the centerpieces here. What stands out for you? What worked?
The one that stands out the most, I don't know if it's the best scene. It's got to be the one with a very young Linda Gray. And again, I think this is a shout out to Psycho.
She gets
home. She goes home alone after turning down a proposition by a guy in a leisure suit.
And one of the other professors, a real slime ball, who's I'm tired of being said goodbye to on the porch every night. Let me in.
Maybe dress differently. But you know, it goes into the whole thing just like Hitchcock did with Marion Crane getting the shower started, her undressing. And of course, she left the back porch door open, and she's in the shower, and then a Doberman makes his way in there and kills her in the shower. And, you know, a lot of quick editing, kind of like Hitchcock did, not nearly as skillfully, of course, but But you can see the homage there, I think. And the other one that stands out, I think, is the sad death of the sheriff, especially considering he, you know, it's to protect, you know, some of the drunk idiots in town who want to go out there and kill whatever's killing, you know, or kill the dogs. But that was actually a pretty long and drawn out death scene.
Yeah, it is.
And pretty bloody. You know, there's a lot of moments of unintentional humor in the movie, but that death was kind of nasty, really.
It is. And I think that one of the things that makes an impact with that scene is that that is one of the characters in this that you actually think, well, this is one of the few people in the town that has a good head on his shoulders. You know, this guy is making sense. I love the moment where he's basically telling all the guys, like, no, I don't want to go out there in the woods with you, you know, as you get drunk and try to shoot a bunch of dogs. You know, you're going to kill somebody. The whole time you're like, this sheriff makes sense. And so, yeah, when he has a big dramatic death moment there, you know, that is definitely one of the ones that has a bit more of an impact where you're like, you know, okay, well, I'm taking this a bit more seriously. Most of the moments in this are just a bit nutty. And yeah, you're totally right for calling out the psycho sequence in this. I mean, as I was watching it, I was going, yeah, they're definitely trying to do Psycho with a dog. And that's a little weird, but I'm down for it. And, you know, like you say, it's nowhere near as intricate. You know, there are some quick edits there, but it's kind of like, I mean, I don't remember how many different shots Hitchcock had, but, you know, maybe divide that by four, and then you've got the number of shots they're working with here. They're pretty much just repeating themselves. But still, I mean, I don't want to say it's a good sequence, but it's a fun sequence. It's wonderfully cheesy. And, you know, I mean, the dog coming through the shower curtain is just great. I mean, you see it coming a mile away, but it was like, if it hadn't happened, I would have been disappointed.
Yeah. And you could say that about, you know, most of the attack sequences, they're fun in a daffy kind of way. And, you know, towards the climax when Harlan and his girlfriend are trapped in the garage and the dogs keep trying to, you know, make their way in through the walls. Even the little dogs, you know, trying to get at them. that was a great scene. And I got to say, the woman who plays his girlfriend, she must have the most god-awful annoying scream of any horror female character I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Sandra McCabe, who I still don't recognize from anything else but this movie. I think she did a few smaller things, but from a character and a performance perspective, I think she is by far the weakest link in the whole film. And that attack scene in the garage just exacerbates that to me.
I think I would agree with that. There are some awkward moments in there where she suddenly lets loose with a scream or something like that, or her reaction is just kind of off. I mean, even for a movie as cheesy as this one is, that whole sequence with them in the house and in the garage and trying to, you know, get in the car and get out and all that. I mean, there were fun elements, but there were also a lot of moments. I think that was the scene where I was rolling my eyes the most, you know, because like, you know, there's the that point where the dog is getting, you know, trying to get in through this little hole, and it grabs McCallum by the leg and all that stuff. And you know, like he's struggling to go get a board to put in front of the hole. And I'm thinking, just like 30 seconds ago, you were hammering boards across the doorway. Where's your hammer? Hit the dog on the nose with the hammer. You know, it's like, I don't know. There were just some things where it was not making sense there. But that sequence too, though, had one of my favorite, most ridiculous moments of the whole thing. Cause when the dogs first bust into the house there, the first dog that goes after him, which I think is the Doberman, you know, there was probably one type of each breed of dog, and they just rotated in the different locations of this movie. So, you know, the same Doberman's at the college campus while the Doberman's in the garage. But anyway, they notice the Doberman and it comes down from upstairs. And I was like, how'd the dog get upstairs? Did it climb a tree and go through the window?
Yeah, that's when you really gotta suspend your disbelief. That's for sure. And that sequence also, I think there was a missed opportunity, because Harlan's girlfriend has like one of those little really tiny toy dogs.
Right.
I would have loved to have seen that dog suddenly turn on her and go for her neck or something like that, you know, to join the pack somehow, because of the pheromones in the air or whatever. And they don't take advantage of that opportunity, but that would have been a great campy inclusion.
Yeah, I agree. That would have been a great inclusion. I was waiting for it to happen. It never happened. So yeah, I agree with you there. I think in that final act of the movie, the better action is going on with the college campus stuff, you know, and again, it's ridiculous. You're kind of going, I don't know that this is well thought out here, guys, you know, but they basically,
it's like the beach attack scene in Jaws, only no one makes it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's so much of this that is right out of Jaws, like you were saying before, but I love that Weiner has to go off and get the fat kid, like we were saying earlier. And then the other, you know, folks are all tired of waiting, so they decide they're going to venture out there. I don't think Weiner really explained to them really the danger going on. He was just kind of like, all right, guys, here's what we got to do. We're going to take down your names. Everybody stay together. We're going to go to the library and all that. I don't remember him actually being like, all right, these dogs are really, really, really dangerous, you know, but these dumb kids walk out there, you know.
He doesn't do anything like that, and I'm not sure why these kids thought the Weiner character was going to save them, or why the library was the safest place. And it is amazing when you consider there's 8 dogs out in front of the library and the carnage that they inflict.
Oh,
I was speaking of the numbers, and you were talking about one Doberman here and one Doberman there. I do. The Blu-ray has a bonus feature on this, and I guess they used 38 total dogs for the production. So, and I think 3 or 4 of them were Dobermans. So yeah, one Doberman here, one Doberman there, and one to roam the desert and go after the drunk guys, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I was disappointed a bit, you know, when all those college students ended up dead. I guess I was, they were all kind of dumb. You know, you were kind of like, you're getting on McCallum's side here when he, you know, was talking about how stupid the kids are at the college. You're kind of like going, yeah, I see that. But again, going back to just, there were some weird characters in the midst. I was like, oh, I like that guy, you know, or like in that scene when they're all grouped together there's all these, like, I don't know, people just stand out because of the way they look, the way their clothing are, the way they're talking. There's this one kid that Weiner talks with in the one scene who's wearing this bright yellow jacket, and he's got these big wide rimmed glasses on. I was like, this guy looks like a live action Minion, you know, and I was, I was sad to see the Minion die.
It's, you know, it's a law in horror movies that college students have to be dumb and generally have to die. Yeah. The one that stood out for me though, is the one that played the fat guy. And my favorite scene though is, when they're in the classroom and George Weiner's character is explaining what pheromones are, and one person asks for a definition and he rattles off this big long definition that he's expecting to write him down, and the fat guy raises his hand and said, can you repeat this? And he said, no, get it from somebody else.
Yeah.
I've had college professors just like that.
Yeah, that's going on rateyourprofessor.com right there. Yeah. All right. Well, we need to talk about the ultimate conclusion of the movie, especially the last shot, because the last shot is precious here. But I guess before we do that, I guess, how do you feel about just the way that everything kind of wraps up on this movie? I mean, I guess it doesn't ultimately wrap up because it's kind of left open-ended.
That's what I kind of like about it. That's the one area where, you know, the movie kind of goes against the grain, you know, because in most of the animal attack movies, whatever the little beastie is, goes out in spectacular fashion. But this one, it probably ends about as logically as it can. I don't know if that's because no one wants to see dogs die, even
well, yeah.
You know, not the dog, no.
Oh, yeah. It always amazes me that, you know, you'll have movies. I mean, here we are talking about a movie here with a high human body count. And yet there are people that will watch this movie and have no problem with that, but they'll complain about the scene where a dog gets shot. I can never get into that mind space, I'm afraid. Dogs coming at me with the teeth and all that. Yeah, all bets are off. I'm sorry. It's him or me. You know, I love dogs, but still. And I mean, like you were saying before, I mean, just the amount of carnage in this. I mean, the blood in this movie, I mean, there's a lot of it, and it's that bright, I always describe it as hammer style blood, you know, where it looks almost more like red paint than blood. But I always find that to be really effective and really jarring. I'm sure that's why Hammer used that style. I'm sure that's why they're using it here, because it just has this unrealistic quality to it that makes it look much more graphic.
I think so. I'm sure it's, cinematically, I suppose it's more vivid, you know, and the movie that comes to mind when I think of that is Dawn of the Dead. I mean, that's got to be the most fluorescent blood of all time. And it's kind of like that. But the Hammer comparison is definitely, definitely accurate. And I'm with you. I love movie gore, as long as I know it's movie gore and it looks like movie gore, and it should be different than I don't really want that much realism in a horror movie.
Yeah.
So yeah, it to me, the color choice kind of adds to the fun of the carnage to me.
There was one bit of this movie though that I wondered if it was movie gore or not, and that's the cows. The stuff with the mutilated cows, I was going, that looks a little too real to me. I'm not sure.
I would imagine it was. I'm sure it would be a lot cheaper just to, you know, go to a slaughterhouse and get some leftovers, and rather than, you know, make it, you know, synthetically. For some reason, that doesn't bother me. I didn't see the cow get butchered, so I'm not really that upset.
Sure. Yeah. All right. Well, we've talked about a lot of kind of spoilerly things here, but, you know, we don't shy away from that on this podcast. But I do want to throw up a warning here, because I want to mention the last stinger of this movie, because I thought this was just classic, priceless, amazing. And I guess since you're a cat guy, I'll let you tell about it.
Okay. The final shot, after it looks like the worst is over and, you know, our heroes are, you know, making their big escape. The final shot, kind of done in slow motion, shows this cat kind of crawling up on top of this hill with this menacing look on its face, and then it's a freeze frame.
And we should say too, after the radio report said it appears only dogs have been affected by this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And apparently there was going to be a sequel at one time planned using cats. Now I don't know if how much of that is true. I don't remember what source I saw that in, but that scene was there, not just to create a little suspense, but also to hint that there's more to come. Unfortunately, that never materialized, and I'm sad because there are no good killer cat movies. come to think of it, yeah, there's no good killer dog movies either. But I just thought that was a great ending to this, and it kind of lets you know that, even though this movie's, you know, pretty serious in tone throughout most of it, the quirky characters and some of the, you know, shout outs to other movies and that ending hinted that, you know, the people behind the camera, maybe had their tongues in cheek just a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, how this movie didn't become a cult classic is beyond me, because to me it's just as amusing as other kind of campish 70s movies like The Car and Night of the Lepus.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it was worth the decades long wait that I waited to see it. I watched it with my daughter just the other day getting ready for this. She had a good time watching it too.
It's a heck of a lot of fun. And yeah, that last moment. Yeah. Like you said, it just kind of, it's this nice little cherry on top that, kind of, I don't know. It kind of says, you know what? You were okay to kind of laugh a little about this movie along the way. But also, I got to admit, I like the way that last shot is done. It's skillfully done, because they're actually, it's kind of one tracking shot where they follow the car as they're driving off, and the car drives out of the shot. And then we see this cat walk over Ridge, and the camera zooms in on that. I was like, wow, that's a well-trained cat. You know, he came up at just the right moment there.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even pay attention to that. That is just one shot, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, because cats aren't the most trainable animals in the world. I know from experience. And, you know, it's interesting is this wasn't the only killer dog movie released that same year. There was another one called The Pack, which isn't nearly as fun. But it is kind of odd that two movies about pretty much the same topic or same subject matter came out around the same time. That's just FYI. I'm just throwing that out there. I didn't know if you were aware of that one.
Well, and there are other sorts of dog movies, you know, throughout the 70s, too. You get the daring Dobermans and the Doberman gang, those type of things going on. So yeah, it's a decade of dogs, I guess. Well, let's take a quick break here. We'll hear from another one of our podcasting friends, and then we'll be back with our movie recommendations here on the Forgotten Filmcast.
You'll save money and time. You'll get the best of merchandise and service when you patronize these good neighbors. Shop with them regularly for friendly service and money-saving values.
What was it about the 90s that made movies so much better? How much of an impact did they make during that decade? And while we're at it, can we throw around some 90s slang? Join me, Jason Soto, a lover of all things 90s, as I do a deep dive into cinema from the best era ever. Rabbit Hole Podcast present That's the Bomb, Yo! 90 Hella Rad Movies from the 90s. You can find this show on Anchor, Apple, Google, anywhere you get podcasts from, or its home location at rabbitholepodcasts.com. And who knows, maybe even Alicia Silverstone will finally accept my date.
Ah, I'm F.
Hi, everybody. This is Todd. Just a quick reminder that you can help support this show through Patreon. For just a few bucks a month, you can support this show and earn access to some bonus features, including a whole bunch of the older episodes of this show that are no longer available on the main podcast feed. Visit patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast to learn more.
In a world where podcasts already seem to address every imaginable subject, one man broke new ground with a seemingly random obsession about exploding helicopters in movies. He was a podcaster on the edge, a maverick broadcaster who played by his own rules. Now, he has a last chance to talk about the strange way helicopters explode in film. Exploding Helicopter, available on iTunes and Podomatic now. Think you know about chopper fireballs? Think again.
As everyone knows, rainbows usually have a treasure at the end. Let's follow this one and see if we can find the pot of gold.
Mother, and I suppose you've come to claim me treasure.
Well, we'd like to see the gold first.
Nathan, there's better than gold in here, me lad. No, just look here, no.
Candy, refreshing soft drinks, popcorn, ice cream. Well, that's some treasure, but anyone can buy luscious treats like these at the snack bar.
You don't tell me. Do you suppose you could get me a job as a snack bar attendant?
Okay, welcome back. It's time for our movie recommendations. This is the part of the show where each of us gets to talk about another movie that we've enjoyed that we just want to let everybody else know about. It might be a forgotten film. It might be an old classic. It might be something new in the theaters or out on streaming. It could be anything. So, Dave, what is your recommendation?
Well, I wanted to keep the dog theme going, and this one is not as obscure. And as far as the fun factor goes, it is the exact opposite of Dogs. It's an animated film called The Plague Dogs.
Oh, I've heard of this. I have not pulled the trigger yet.
for those of you who are unfamiliar, The Plague Dogs is based on a novel by Richard Adams, who's most famous for Watership Down, which was made into, in my opinion, one of the greatest non-Disney animated movies ever made. And the same director, Martin Rosen, went ahead and adapted this novel, The Plague Dogs, about these two dogs that escape from a research facility where they've been experimented on. And in a nutshell, without going into too much detail, it's their quest is to try to find new masters and get away from human beings in general. And it is by far the most emotionally devastating movie I have ever seen to this day. And if you're a dog lover, it will screw you up for life. But it's extremely well made, and it has a really potent message about animal rights that, you know, everyone should be aware of. It's a film I've watched twice, and I will never watch it again. But it's a movie I think everyone should experience. I mean, if you don't have all the empathy in the world for every animal that you ever run into after seeing this, then you're never going to have any empathy.
Yeah, I've heard this one is a challenging watch for sure. I'm sure that's why I've kind of, you know, avoided it for some time. But yeah, I know this is one that I've heard a lot of good things about, and got to check it out.
Bring tissues.
Well, I decided to stick with the animal theme as well here, but I stayed within the animals attack genre here. And this is one that I kind of like Dogs. I don't know that I can say it's a great movie, but I found it very entertaining, probably for a lot of cheesy reasons. But I'm going to go to 1979 and the movie Prophecy, which is where we have this time a bear that is on the loose. And this one, I remember going to the video store in the 80s and seeing this box on the shelf all the time, because this was a scary looking box. The poster image has this strange looking creature that's kind of balled up in what looks like a egg or something like that. And, you know, looks like an alien or something. I had always thought this was like an alien horror movie, but nope. Imagine my surprise when I finally got around to seeing it. It's about a mutated bear. Also surprising, this is directed by John Frankenheimer.
John Frankenheimer, I know.
As a Manchurian Candidate, John Frankenheimer. But anyway, and also, too, it's written by David Seltzer, who wrote The Omen, and also wrote and directed one of my favorite 80s teen movies, Lucas, which was shot in the area of the Chicago suburbs where I grew up. I remember when they were filming that thing. But yeah, this one, it's got environmental themes to it. You know, basically, you've got like a logging company that's kind of at odds with a Native American tribe, and then they start to see that, you know, some like lumberjacks get killed, and, you know, people are pointing the finger in different directions. Who did it? Well, the natives, they believe it is this vengeful spirit that has come to protect their land. Well, it actually turns out that it is a mutated bear that is running amok. And we assume also, because, you know, there's the, you know, whatever going on with the evil corporations, whatever, that the animals are mutating, you know, because of this stuff. I mean, it doesn't get much deeper than that. It's just turns into crazy fun as this bear goes nuts. And the film is especially notorious for, you know, some of the attack scenes, especially one that involves some campers and a death involving a sleeping bag, which...
Oh, that's a great scene.
I am not going to go any further than that, but it is one of the most memorable scenes in an animal attack movie that there is. The bear is totally freaky. I mean, this thing looks like a bear mixed with like the creature from the Black Lagoon, with the Thing. It's just, I can't even describe it really. Pretty solid cast too. You got like Robert Foxworth, Talia Shire, Armand Asante, Richard Dysart. So, you know, some pretty good folks in there. But I mean, I admit it is a shut off the brain and just have fun type of movie. But this is one of the ones that always comes to mind for me first when I think about Animals Attack films.
Yeah, I could do you one better. I went and saw that in a theater. That's how old I am. And I saw it shortly at the same place, shortly after I saw Halloween for the first time, which really turned me into a horror fan. And so I was ready for every horror movie that was going to come out. And Prophecy was the next one that came there. And I had a great time. And, you know, there's some great death scenes in that movie. And, you know, you mentioned John Frankenheimer. I watched this interview with David Seltzer years later, and this is after Frankenheimer had passed away. And apparently the director was pretty frank and hammered throughout the whole movie. He had quite a drinking problem. That movie was kind of the beginning of his career downfall. You know, the quality of his work was starting to slip quite a bit. But it's a fun movie, and I found it wildly entertaining. I still do.
Well, Dave, I want to thank you for being on the show. Before I let you go here, please remind everybody of where they can find you and all the stuff you're working on out there.
Yeah, all the stuff I work on is at freekittensmovieguide.com. Like I said before, right now it's pretty top heavy with reviews of new discs, a lot of classics coming out in 4K. And then I have my holiday gift guide coming out. So be sure to check that out.
Absolutely. I will be making my Christmas list soon. Well, thanks again for being on the show, and I'll be back to close things here in just a moment here on the Forgotten Filmcast. Well, that brings us to the end of episode 201 of the Forgotten Filmcast. Thank you, as always, for listening. You'll find more reviews of Forgotten Films over at the Forgotten Films blog. That's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. You can follow me on the artist formerly known as Twitter, or X, at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z. And you can like Forgotten Films at Facebook. I welcome your questions, comments, and feedback about the show, so please email me at forgottenfilmcast@gmail.com. And if you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave a positive comment over on iTunes or whatever service you use to listen to this show. And don't forget about our Patreon page, patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast, where you can learn all about how you can help support this show. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time.
So free, the blossom embraces the bee. The morning will come when the world will be. These sweet rolls belong to me.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.